Unpaved, Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in to Unpaved. He is Sean Salisbury. I am Adam Sager. Follow the show at Unpaved on Rumble on Twitter or X, whatever you call it. Follow me at Adam G. Sager. Sean, of course, at Sean Unfiltered. And like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. It'll give you notifications every day when we go live Monday through Friday. Sean, we were just talking before the show about it being National Signing Day yesterday. Signings are flowing into today, but we're seeing, like we do every year, just flips. And now we know a lot of times, especially when it's these big time recruits, it's about the money and it's openly out there, as opposed to 10 years ago it was all hush hush. But oh, this guy all of a sudden flipped from Clemson to Alabama or Alabama to Clemson, and it's just such a different time with all the money flowing in this sport right now that everything is changing so fast in college athletics.
Well, Segs, good to see you today, brother. Yep. And hopefully, well, I'll be in a normal setting now instead of a hotel room with lights behind me, like I'm trying to you know, tone down the atmosphere. Ooh, let's turn the lights down. Right now,
there you go.
It's good to be with you, my man, here in Alabama and on NSR Day. Well, I would have met or on NSR, but on recruiting, signing day with, you know, throughout all this and continues to go on. And like you mentioned, Tuscaloosa, not far down the road, they'll be happy and all that goes on in the SEC and with this. But you're right, Segs, it did. It used to be, okay, who cheated? Who flipped that kid? Who cheated? What new car is Pop's driving now? And now it's
what
just like,
jumped well, in.
Yeah, let's see. Well, Otani got his. The high school 17-year-old recruit got his. Trout got his free, you know, you start to go right now. They're just all mixed into one. It's lumped in, right? NFL free agency, NIL, National Signing Day. But the truth, Segs, with all this is, and guys flipping quarterbacks going here and like people going nuts. And I'm sure there's even parents that are like, wait a second. Well, we thought you were going there. Now I got to go buy a new hat or sweater or t-shirt or hoodie. But the truth is, Segs, I can remember back in my now wasn't made as big a deal back then. I can remember Bob Lee. Remember when ESPN started that recruiting? When I was getting recruited, just to hear Bob Lee say your name, it was like, and that was his like top recruit in the country. Nowadays, it's like, oh my gosh, going haywire and you're putting money in your back pocket. But life-changing days for these kids, right, Segs, and their families, all those things. And when you think about what, less than 5 or 4% actually set foot on a college campus and all this, and then you talk about the Division I part of it, all those things that go on. That's why NSR can help. We'll get to that. Thank you, Lucy, for the nice compliment. But, you know, just having people recognize and understand that you're out there is important. But congratulations to all these guys. And my Trojans sit at the top, at least now, as the number one, recruiting class in the country and much needed. Now it goes to the developmental side, Segs, you know, which I almost think Segs gets kind of lost in translation. You get them. In just the banter, right? We go from, man, top recruiting class. Oh, man, what happened? These guys are underachievers. As opposed to in between there, if you got a five-star and you recruited him and evaluated him properly, did he stay a five-star? We see it happen all the time. Say, go in a great player, we never hear from him again. Or go in a guy who's not a great player, and, man, he's been developed right. Look at him now. Right. And then the transfer portal comes in if he's at a smaller school. But that developmental part of this – and we got some teams here in the playoffs, Segs, and we talked about it, that are in the playoff right now that have done a great job of not only recruiting, but developing these players to give them a chance to do what they're doing in a lot of these positions. So we always talk about wins and losses, but in order to win games, you better understand with your coaches in the developmental process, not only to be able to recruit them, and money helps now, that's the great equalizer, but while they're there, do you continue to keep them hungry and competitive without leaving? And then, as we know, Segs, the recruiting signing day may be, you know, throughout this week, but guess what? When you have them there, you're still recruiting the cats that are on campus.
Yes.
That you never had to do before. So good on them, but it's always nice because, you know, people love the banter. It's like NFL draft, and recruiting's the same way because the pride they have in their school. Moment. Yeah. Where's Michigan sit right now? Segs, I'm not being
honest. Right around 15. Right around.
Okay, yeah, I figured. Right.
They lost someone today, but then they're gaining on some, and that's just, you never know. And you mentioned USC. They're still in the hunt for arguably the best wide receiver in the class, and that's Chris Henry Jr., the son of the late Chris Henry, the Bengals wide receiver. So they're still trying to get him. Ohio State's still fighting for him. That's where he was committed, and then Oregon's also in the mix. So,
yeah, really takes a story. I had to remind me of this yesterday. He said, Sean, is it true he'd heard the story? Did Robbie Boskal call you and, you know, find out where you were going to go first? Because it came down to SC, BYU for me. I'd gone, taken a trip to Notre Dame and UCLA and Cal. And it came down to just the how it's changed. And he had called me and through the process, it had waited and said that he was going to wait till my decision because Robbie's first choice was BYU. And had I gone to BYU, Boskal wasn't going to go there. Really good player and a great guy. I ended up making the decision to go to USC, and I remember I got a call from Jim Kersatos and I the same way. The guy, he ended up going to Ohio State. So, you know, there's back then, there's like five guys getting recruited by five different schools. So if Notre Dame signed one, no sense to go two places. So when Robbie was making his decision, and I was, so I chose USC, and then Boskal went to BYU, and crazy enough about it, in 1984, they go win a national championship, and Robbie's the quarterback. And he was a hell of a human being and a great player. But it's, you know, because that fraternity, we see all these guys at camps. And when we're going through Segs, you know, we get recruited. And now even more so because they go to all these elite camps. Right. Back then, you'd see them one time. But you're paying attention through all the scouting services and what they were saying about you. But, you know, at that point, now it's like, hey, man, I just saw you a week ago. We trained together. Where are you going? I'm going to Southern Cal. Cool. I'm going to end up going to Ohio State. Boom. There you go. So how it's changed, but yeah, the communication, because the truth is everybody makes a big deal of it. Most of these cats have been at camps and are friends anyway, but now with the portal, it's no sense in 2 5-star recruits showing up to the same place, because eventually that quarterback room, if you have five of them, are going to end up, three of them are going to end up playing somewhere else anyway. So
yeah,
it was a reminder of that story. And Robbie went on to win his national title and was a great player at college. And then unfortunately injury set him back in the NFL, but was a third round draft pick by the Packers. So, but he's got the ring that I didn't quite get, Seg. So it's weird how it all works out. Yeah.
Yes, for sure. Before we get to Thursday night football, almost said Monday night. It's only Thursday. Thursday night football. We got a good game tonight, especially if you like offense. But tell me about Augusta Precious Metals.
Yeah, which means we'll take the under tonight, right, Seg?
Yeah, probably.
It'll be 17-14. Augusta Precious Metals, great partner for us, and so grateful for their relationship with us. But I was late to the Precious Metals party. I know I say it often, but I'm just trying to, you know, sometimes we got to hit ourselves over the head with the sledgehammer saying, if this is this valuable, precious metals and gold, why aren't more people, or a lot of people are, why aren't you or me doing this? Well, I am, and so are you, I hope. And watching games and stuff as we go through in football and sports, you know, the time's ticking, man. You got 60-minute game, and you get to play another one. But sometimes in life, as we're going through it, you know, you try to stay calm, make right decisions. But in life, in your retirement, and your confidence in retirement, sometimes if you wait too long for your retirement, guess what? You don't get a chance to go back 30 years and make up for it, or 5 years and say, I should have jumped on some precious metals. I should have jumped on gold and that tangible asset in your hand. And Augusta Precious Metals, not only as a partner, I've been following them and talking to their team, which also helps me, but helps you. Now, listen. If you're trying to retire with confidence or prepare for retirement with confidence, you know what's going on. We're $36, $38 million in debt. I mean, $38 trillion. It's going to push 40 in the next year or so. And that affects Segs. It affects me. It affects you. It affects everybody, billionaire, everybody in between. So why in the world wouldn't we want something that, I don't want to say there's no guarantees in life, but You see it going up, gold, and it's not going anywhere but up. Why wouldn't you secure your retirement with those precious metals that Washington doesn't make all your decisions for you? Isn't it nice to have something in your hand where they don't get to make the decisions for you? And what Augusta Precious Metals has come up with too, and it's brilliant, is they put together a short free guide called the $40 trillion debt report. And it's so important because it's an easy read. It's a quick read. Take a minute and go over that. If you're talking about your future, sometimes we can throw a pick and come back the next series. If you throw a pick when it comes to not getting involved in gold or Washington deciding your future because you weren't involved with gold and Augusta Precious Metals, and they're so good at explaining it and educating you. They don't want you to do it unless you're educated about it. Why would you? It's your money and it's your future and it's your retirement. So get in there and get this $40 trillion threat report. Again, almost $40 trillion in debt. Are you kidding me? By next year, country. So don't let Washington affect you in your retirement. You should be able to retire with confidence. If nothing else, you've at least informed yourself when you go and text Sean to SEAN to 35052. Go in there. You're going to get that guide. It's a link in my description as well. And go in there, get that guide. Just go over it and find out what options you have, because we're all playing a game and we're all into the game. And I'd sure as heck like the answers to the test before the doggone conflict buried me. And when it comes to retirement, you may not have that chance to get a second series like you do in a sport or a football game or the third quarter. And if you're in retirement, you're probably in the third quarter of life too, right? So be smart with it. Augusta Precious Metals, text Sean, S-E-A-N, to 35052, and just educate yourself. And I'm telling you right now, when it comes to precious metals, there is no better place to educate yourself and be involved with than Augusta Precious Metals. Thankful for the partnership, but thankful also for the difference they're making for me and for everybody out there that's part of it. It doesn't hurt to go in and spend a few minutes checking out the free guide and seeing what's going on and how precious metals can help you.
All right. Thank you to Augusta Precious Metals as always. All right, Sean, we got a good game tonight. Cowboys at Lions, Thursday night football. But before we get to that, just some breaking news from Adam Schefter. Jalen Carter, Eagles defensive tackle, is out for Monday's game against the Chargers. Underwent a procedure on both shoulders, so we'll have to see how that affects him moving forward, because that is a key piece to the Eagles defense that is very young and has been struggling a little bit. So that's something to monitor over these last.
And real quick about that, Segs, that defense is going to have to elevate. That defense is going to have to elevate, because the offense still has not hit full stride. Consistently. So they're going to need him. And as we know, early in his career, he's one of the fierce players in this league.
Yes, for sure. Tonight, Cowboys at Lions. I just mentioned this is the number one offense in yards per game as Dallas. Detroit's third. Dallas is 393 yards per game. Detroit sitting at 376. So if you want offense, both these teams have it in plenty. So the passing game with Amon-Ra St. Brown, who will be back, plenty of weapons on Detroit, even with Laporta down, Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery in the backfield, getting the ball from Jared Goff. And then in Dallas, you have George Pickens, CeeDee Lamb, arguably the best duo in football this year. And we've been talking about the Steelers and Mike Tomlin and what's going on there. Remember, they traded George Pickens for a third, gave up a second to go get DK Metcalf. And Pickens has damn near doubled Metcalf's production down here.
Better player than him right now.
Yes.
Better player.
And I know George Pickens is a bit of a problem sometimes when it comes to locker room and just on the field stuff, just kind of an issue. But he's shown why he was one of the better wide receivers when he came out, and he's played really well this year. What do you look at in this game first and say, okay, here's the biggest difference maker, if it be for Dallas or Detroit?
Yeah, Segs, and you know, with that Pickens stuff impressing, you're right. If I'd have gone in, I said, as gifted a duo as there is in the league, Pickens and CeeDee Lamb, but will they execute that, right? We've seen Pickens make plays, and the talent's enormous in Pittsburgh. The truth of the matter is he's in a better passing place right now with Dallas. It knows how to, they're doing a lot better job. But he's at a place where we've actually got to see him. You know what I always say, Segs, is the headache bigger than the talent? Dallas decided the talent was bigger than the headache, and you know what? It actually has been this year.
Yep.
You know, it has been, and Pickens can play. If you're smart and you're the Cowboys, don't screw this up. You better keep them both, Segs, because CeeDee Lamb even becomes more effective with Pickens on the field. He just does. And CeeDee Lamb's been productive, but man alive, the production will continue with both out there. You know, the thing for me in this game, six, I don't have any issue. Both offenses can score from the parking lot.
Right.
And we know both defenses have had a some Dow Jones. I actually like the Lions defense, but, and I think they're really aggressive. Segs is going to come down to real simple. I think both offenses are going to move. I haven't even looked at the number on the over-under yet, but you would think going in that the if you have half a brain, you would think take the over in this because it's going to be the weather's not going to affect it regardless of what it is because it wouldn't matter where you played it. It's you cover up the facility, right?
Yep.
Segs, if I asked you right now, who do you have more confidence in going forward this year with what you've seen the last month? What would you tell me?
Oof, it's tough. It's tough because one thing I had written down, and you didn't know I had written this down, the last three games each team has played, Cowboys beat the Raiders 33-16, beat the Eagles 24-21, beat, well, I wrote that wrong because they haven't beat Detroit. They beat Philly 31-28, right? Or who'd they play on Thanksgiving? That's what I'm trying to remember.
No, Kansas City.
Kansas City. They beat Kansas City. I wrote down Detroit. And then the Lions, 3 weeks ago, lost to Philly 16-9, only scored 9 points. New York Giants beat them 34-27 in a high-scoring affair where Jameis had that touchdown catch, and the Giants were actually up in that game, if you remember, pretty big early on. And then they come back and lose to the Green Bay Packers 31-24. On Thanksgiving. So right now, over the last month, you got to like the way Dallas is trending because they've played some good teams. They've beat them, whereas Detroit's played some good teams and lost to them and struggled with the New York Giants.
And you know what's also about that, Segs, and with the numbers you gave, and that's why, and I did not know you wrote that down, it's been on my mind, is it tells you, look, at there's been very few blowouts in the six games among the two teams, whoever they played. It tells you the Dallas Cowboys, what it tells me when you're winning close games, even if it's ugly, that the Dallas Cowboys are learning how to win close games. In those three games, Detroit's lost, that even when they won, it's been close, but when they've lost a close one, that the Cowboys are closing better than the Lions are now. Listen, when you look at the array of talent on the field, the obvious thing looking at is that offense will be the key in this game. But there's got to be a sense of urgency for both because neither team should be very comfortable, Segs, with where they're sitting in their position, right, confidence-wise, but I'm talking about in their playoff situation. I know must wins 4 or 5 weeks before the season's over a little overboard, but I think you have to preach that, Segs, and I'll be honest with you. Right now, the way that Schottenheimer's got his team going, and as much as I love Dan Campbell, Dan's got some stuff to fix being the fact that he's calling plays as well. And I know that both teams get a little greedy offensively, and in the play calling, Detroit's got a lot more greedy. I think it comes down to this tonight. If Detroit dominates the run game, Detroit's winning this game. I don't know what the stats would be for the quarterbacks. They got to dominate the run game and be committed to that and then get off the field on third downs at times with the Cowboys. I like Detroit in a close one in this. I think confidence, but I'm going to tell you, Segs, if we come on this show tomorrow and Dallas has gone in there and won, I think they're going to end up rolling through and finding a way to the playoffs. But I'm going to tell you what, I will not be shocked because I think Dak Prescott's as underappreciated as we have in the league. I do. And the reason why, Segs, is because of sometimes in big moments, sometimes when the defense falters and he's got to be in a shootout and throws a pick late, it's all on even though he put 38 on the board. I'm talking about the past. Finished his second in the MVP a couple years ago, overcomes another injury, is just a good dude, but on the field. Every single week, I'm thinking, why in the world is it? And he's had to transform his game, Segs, mix a little running, but he's becoming so much more efficient in the pocket. I think he's highly underappreciated. And there's this part of me that wants to think the Cowboys are going to go on the road and take care of their business anyway. But I don't like the way Detroit's playing. And we talked about that basketball game last night, Segs. We did about Arkansas and the way they're playing in Louisville. Look what happened. One was on fire. They got punched in the mouth early and couldn't overcome it. And Arkansas wins the game. I actually think if Dallas will punch quick, you could bury Detroit and make them chase and get mistakes. Detroit's got to come out fast in the first quarter, dominate the first quarter. The team that runs the ball the most and the best tonight wins this football game.
Yeah, and I mean, just looking at it, to wrap this up, your wild cards right now in the NFC. You have the Seattle Seahawks at 9-3. You have the Green Bay Packers at 8-3-1 due to that tie with Dallas. And then you have the San Francisco 49ers at 9-4. These are the next two teams out. 7-5, the Detroit Lions. They're the 8 seed. And then you have the Dallas Cowboys at 6-5-1. So, I mean, they're right there trying to work their way into the playoffs, but you have some really, really good records in the NFC, and it's going to be tough for maybe even both these teams if San Francisco and company in front keep winning.
So tell me, it's real rich for somebody to say out there that you don't need must wins this far away. No, they do.
Yes.
And it is. And so I put it on there. And if the Cowboys are able with that record, Sags, to roll through and get to the playoffs, you know what it'll tell you? That's as hot a team as there is in the league going into January.
They are dangerous.
No doubt.
They are dangerous if they make the playoffs. Moving on, something that happened a couple days ago, but didn't get to it yesterday with all the playoff committee stuff. Lane Kiffin has allowed Charlie Weiss, and Ole Miss has taken Charlie Weiss back for the college football playoff. What do you think of this move? Is it because I've heard some people say, right move by Lane to let Charlie go back. He kind of looked bad when he forced the assistants to come right away when they're not necessarily needed that bad when it comes to recruiting. Yes, it helps to have them, but if the players know that Charlie Weiss is coming, that helps them make a decision. But then I've also seen people say Ole Miss are kind of, you know, going back on what they said about Lane not coaching. So they should be letting Lane coach if they're going to let Charlie Weiss coach. I don't have a problem with this either way. I think Lane made the right decision to let him coach, and I think Ole Miss is right to take him back to give these kids the best chance to win in the college football playoff, and I think everybody's fine right now, but everybody likes to make an issue of everything.
I'm all in on this, Segs. I don't know why it's a problem. And the head coach and the coordinator are different in LSU. Lane knows how to recruit. He can get by a week.
Yes.
Or throughout the playoff, depending on how long Ole Miss goes, he can still recruit. Because the truth is, Lane knows who the guys that Charlie's going to go out and recruit on the road. Lane is just going to have to do a little more legwork as a recruiter. He just is. So that's the only thing. You know, it ain't like, oh, man, I just interviewed Charlie Weiss. He was at another school. I'm talking about for Lane at LSU. Mm-hmm. And I got to figure out what kind of offense we're going to run. We already know that. Yep. So the only reason you want Charlie Weiss around right now, if you're LSU, and your Lane Kiffin is what, Sags? To have him go out and recruit and do all that and glad hand, right, and get the stuff and just the organizational stuff. Lane can handle that because Charlie can finish Lane's sentences at this point in the career, and he knows how to do it. So that's one, and Lane's a good salesman. He sends him back, and if Ole Miss fans are mad, don't be mad. Why? Your better chance to win in the playoff is having Charlie Weiss there so Pete can just focus on special teams, defense, and let Charlie do his thing. Because if you didn't, well, our assistants could do it. No, it's not that easy to be a play caller. It's easier to be an X's and O's guy, but a play caller that gets in rhythm, so you don't have to worry about it. And it's not like Charlie's coming back and doesn't know what they're going to put in for the system. He knows it. It's great for Ole Miss. It's great for Pete, the head coach, and it's great for Ole Miss to – it gives them – if you're an Ole Miss alum, doesn't it give you a better chance to win? Put your ego and your angry at Lane aside, and it's also a good ass kiss by Lane. It's a makeup call. He could have been a prick and said, you know, no. Charlie, if you go, you're fired. You're not coming back to LSU. Let him go. Charlie wants to go help. And you know what I like about this? It shows me that it gives you a little bit in humanity that those kids at Ole Miss, he wants to go back and assist him and give them the best chance. And hell, guess what? If Charlie goes back and they win a national championship, Sags, he's going to bring a ring with him back to LSU and say, see what you missed out on joking with him, right? So I don't see one negative about this. Ole Miss gets favor. I mean, gets a guy who gets it. Lane Kiffin can handle recruiting. LSU's not going any. They're done. And Ole Miss has a chance. And the best chance for the Ole Miss team and fans to succeed is by having Charlie call the plays so Pete doesn't have to train another assistant, the assistant or the what, to call plays. This is a brilliant move by both. And it's a good PR move by Lane not to stifle Charlie and not to stifle Ole Miss. And it's not going to bother LSU at all.
We talked so much yesterday about the what-ifs when it came to Notre Dame, Miami, Texas, BYU, all these discussions, Alabama, Georgia. And we didn't get to talk Ole Miss. Ole Miss was ranked 6th. Do you feel by what's happened in the past when it comes to Florida State and the quarterback injury and Jordan Travis and them falling out of the playoff, do you feel like Ole Miss should have been penalized at least a little bit by Lane leaving instead of actually moving up in the rankings? And so they actually got help after their head coach, who just signed one of the biggest deals we've ever seen when it comes to yearly salaries for a coach in college football, yet they went up. And then a couple of years ago, Florida State falls out because they lose their quarterback. Where do you see this whole thing in terms of should Ole Miss be punished for this?
Yeah, great question, Siggs. I think what helps, I'm being honest about this, because you know how important I tell you staff is, mm-hmm. right? Assistant coaches. Had Pete and Charlie and Lane all left, I think it would have hit him worse, because you lose the entire core of your coaching yeah. staff. Having Pete stay there that keeps a little continuity is important. And the truth of the matter is they're taking into account that the quarterback's got the ball in his hand 80 times a game. The coach doesn't get to affect it that way. Gets the call to play, still got to execute it. Right. I thought that it would have affected him a little more, even if it was one slot, Sags. You know what I mean? Moving back. It was never going to affect him enough to push him out.
Right.
Because now, quarterback, if the quarterback said, I'm transferring right now because I don't want him to go recruit and I'm leaving as well, it would have been a different story if he said, you know what, forget it. I'm not even playing this damn thing out. I'm done. I know that under the rules and all that, the timing, but you get my point, right, Sags, when I'm a little hyperbolic. But I don't think, and remember, Charlie, they had made the decision with Charlie to go back before last Tuesday night stuff, right? What they did
Tuesday during the day, yes.
Added a little more continuity for Ole Miss. So, yeah, a little surprising, Sags, but even if they'd have gone from dropped to eight, would it have really mattered for them overall? Okay, so they're in it, and their head coach is gone. So I think a lot of us thought it would have affected them more. Had it have been a star player, if this was Ohio State and Ryan was leaving and the quarterback, or Ryan was staying and the quarterback transferred or got hurt, they would look at it different. There is absolutely no question. But the player holds more, they lend more credence to that than they do the coach, although Lane's obviously a lightning rod for it. I'm not surprised that it didn't crush him, but I thought it would have hurt him a little bit. But having Charlie and Pete there, the continuity stays.
Yeah, and I guess we still have to see. There's still one more final rankings before the playoff starts this Sunday before the NFL kicks off. I think the show is normally at 11 a.m. Central Time. But Ole Miss could still fall. And why I say that is the 5-6 spots are so important in this college football playoff. If you don't have one of those buys, you desperately want the 5 or 6, especially with the way things look this year, because you're either playing Virginia if you're the 5 or the 6. So where Ole Miss sits right now, Virginia is probably the best team because they're a power four team and they're a big school. And then
they've had a hell of a year, Sags. They've had a hell of a year. They play really good football.
And then the 5 seed plays the G5 team, North Texas, Tulane, JMU, whoever gets in that spot. Now, if Virginia loses, two of those teams are in, and the 5 and 6 get to play those teams. So that's why I say, I wonder if we still see some movement, especially if like Alabama wins, do they jump them up some and maybe put them in that 6 spot and move everybody back a spot and then figure out the rest as it goes.
Who do Ole Miss lose to, Sags? Was their loss?
I'm blanking right off the top of my head. Was it Alabama?
While you're looking,
I'm trying to think.
They got beat by Bama. I'm pretty sure. That's in my mind. Georgia. Okay, it was Georgia. That's exactly right.
Yes, it was Georgia.
And we sat there and talked about it and watched it on TV anyway.
Yes, 43-35.
Okay, and I guess what was a better loss, A&M's loss or Ole Miss? I'm going with a point here. A hot Texas team or Georgia? At the time, probably Ole Miss would you consider that a better loss still? Right. I think you would get some arguing because some actually thought at times that, well, maybe A&M should be moved up ahead of IU. You know, that argument in the mm-hmm. 2 through 4 spot. So no argument there, but it could be very simple. You're right. After the last one, they may move back. They may move. 5 and 6 is important. But with that in mind, how far will they move back, Sags? Where are you moving them?
Just to 7. I'm not saying drop them to like 10, but with those games,
maybe a different draw, right?
Yes. Yeah. If maybe you're 7 right now, you're playing 10. So it would be Texas A&M, Notre Dame. That's a big difference going from Notre Dame to Virginia or JMU or something.
And here's what you're talking about, Sags, about, well, should it have hit worse? And while there's continuity, but if I'm the committee, why would I reward Ole Miss?
Right.
For with their head coach leaving, because Lane does make a difference. Let's make no mistake
100%.
About it. So, and that's why this spot that you're talking about, that I won't be, I mean, would you be shocked if the 6 and 7 flipped? I mean, in their minds going forward?
No.
I mean, who, if they both played today, who's better? A&M or Ole Miss, who would you pick? I'm just using those two as an example.
Probably A&M.
Okay, me too. Just maybe defensively a little bit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
With the losing lane. So with that, you're exactly right. So I think more importantly, well, why are they dropping? But the 5-6 hole are important, on, like you said, on the draw and who you would get to play. So that may come into play. But with one more to go, don't be shocked if it does happen because of that. But what you can't do is all of a sudden say, well, we're rewarding Ole Miss by losing their coach. It just doesn't make sense considering the landscape of college football and the slotting of this, no doubt.
Yes, it'll be interesting to see. Now, one discussion we did have yesterday a lot about was Notre Dame-Miami. We all know Miami beat Notre Dame early in the season and then lost a couple games, especially some they shouldn't have lost, Louisville included, while Notre Dame started off 0-2 and then rattled off 10 straight double-digit wins. So where do you stand on this? Well, Mario Cristobal, he voiced his opinion on this, and we have video of it that we'll play in just a second, but he's essentially saying the resume leans towards the Hurricanes. Now, yes, that's their coach, but I think when you look at it, I think he's right. Here's what Mario Cristobal had to say about Notre Dame.
And we've won 10 games, just like, you know, we're being compared to, obviously, to Notre Dame in a lot of different forms and fashions, but the totality of our resume got just as strong or stronger than anybody else. And after their first two losses, right, their resume got stronger. But when you break it down, those 10 games, two were against group of five opponents. And of the other 8 games, 6 of those games were against defenses that were ranked 105 and beyond, right, 105 to 127. So I think when you start looking at the true facts surrounding a resume and how a resume is actually built, I think all those things will be taken into account. And I respectfully will always provide any and all information to whoever it is necessary so we could have a fair and honest judgment and decision on what is the reality that we're the best and most deserving team.
I mean, that's a pretty good argument right there.
And you know, Segs, what I love, he didn't have to belabor a point and hang on it very long. He gave a couple good facts and said, now you tell me why he's wrong. You know what he's saying? You know what he's saying, Segs? Is while Miami's a brand, Notre Dame's a bigger brand to the committee.
Yeah.
What other reason would they be? Because they love good player. I mean, a hell of a talent, great player. What's the reason that Notre Dame's ahead of Miami?
And the other
Cristobal team just told you, played a group of five,
yep,
and then defenses at 100 plus or worse. That's not to say Notre Dame's not a good football team, but Miami, if Miami gets snubbed, it's going to be a bad gig. It just is. So yep. If somehow, some way they get okey-doked, because right now where they're sitting, and I thought he handled it calmly and great. I don't know, unless you're a Notre Dame, take yourself out of your love for Miami or Notre Dame. Is it possibly because the one loss, what was it, the SMU, Sakes? Is that what
yeah,
was
SMU
it, bad
and,
loss?
And Louisville.
They got two of them.
Two
yeah, Miami was the one loss, the loss to SMU, I think, is the one, like Texas with Florida holding over their head. SMU's losses, I think there's some punishment there. But when you look at the entire body of work, and I think that's what we're supposed to do, resume wise, and who they, you do got to take into the account defenses and where they're ranked and who you play, strength of schedule. Does Miami not have an argument? What did Cristobal say that was that? And I do get it. And I see here, is it Jared? You're right. Don't lose to SMU. Then a Texas fan will come and say, we belong in because we got 3 top 10. Well, don't lose to Florida.
Right.
So, listen, Segs, unless.
It, And here's where my head explodes.
Miami's like, Miami's in a tough situation, man. Where they
Jared
are now.
Says don't lose to SMU. Okay, yeah, sure. But the thing that Mario Cristobal didn't say, because everybody knows, Miami beat Notre Dame.
Right. he didn't even have to say that. Right.
So you can't say don't lose to SMU. No, you beat Notre Dame. Like, okay. You beat the team in front of you. That's where I go crazy here. Like, you have the head-to-head.
Okay, who's got both got two losses, right, Sex?
Yeah.
Okay. And then you heard Mario shape up Notre Dame's the defense they played in the group of five.
Right.
And Miami beat Notre Dame. So basically, now in this case, with all the facts in, you're telling me that Miami's victory over Notre Dame doesn't hold water with where they're ranked, correct?
Yeah.
You're not telling me that the committee is, correct?
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
Okay, so once again, real quick, how does Miami get in the playoff? Under these circumstances, you tell me how they get in.
I think, you know, again, it's one of Alabama or BYU losing. And then,
or you would love to have both.
Well, yeah, if both they're in, just the other way to get in is one of them losing, and the committee hear what's being said, and a couple of them, and Hunter Yurecek put it out there that no standings right now are final. You can still move up or down without playing this weekend, and the committee comes to their senses, in my opinion, and says, yeah. Guys, we're crazy. Miami beat Notre Dame. We have to put them in as the same record.
See, the sell job is what's going to have to get Miami in if both teams don't lose, is my point. Right. And you know what's interesting, Siggs? You stand up there. So how are they going to stand up in front of us if it goes like that and they're to the chaotic decision they're going to have to make about the Hurricanes, the Notre Dame, that?
Mm-hmm.
So you're telling me the loss to SMU hit harder than beating the team head-to-head. So where's head-to-head rank in the in the slotting of the importance of it? Does it matter? I think it does, because we're saying Alabama's victory over Georgia matters, right?
Yep.
Head-to-head. So I just, for me, the Hurricanes, listen, and it is very feasible that Georgia beats Alabama and that Texas Tech beats BYU, and we don't have an argument here. Miami will get in, and they should.
Yeah.
But my question is, what if the season was done right now? Let's say there was nothing going on. Where would you have Miami ranked, Sags?
10.
10? You would, right?
Yeah.
Okay. There you go. So, yeah. So Mario Cristobal is going to have to keep selling.
Yeah.
Because you probably got to go in counting on the fact that you'd like it hard to beat BYU, hard to beat them twice in one year if you're Texas Tech, as we said. And Alabama's got Georgia already. It'll be hard to beat them. Georgia's playing lights out football right now. So Miami's, I hate to say it, they're hanging on a thread, but partially by their own doing with SMU, but they played good enough football to be one of their, they're one of the top 12 teams in the country right now. Forget the conference championship season. They are. And we're going to find out next week when is that? Sunday, Segs?
Yeah,
if Sunday. Notre Dame or Miami, how important head-to-head is in this. If the Alabama and BYU game split on who wins and who loses, Miami belongs in the, right? As we sit today, Miami should be in the playoffs.
Yeah. And this is why I said it, I think last week or the week before, when we get these rankings, I want the committee to say, okay, here's our top 25, but here are the teams that are still alive for the college football playoff. So we're going to say our top 12 teams are still alive in this picture we have sitting here. So Ohio State through Miami are still alive for the college football playoffs in our minds. And then you add in Tulane, JMU, Virginia, and North Texas. So you have 16 teams still alive for the college football playoff. And now we're telling you that Texas has dropped out, Vandy's dropped out, Utah's dropped out, USC. For whatever reason it is, they've dropped off the list of potential candidates for the college football playoff. That's what I want to
see.
Yeah. Right. Because I want to know their thinking from week to week, say, telling us, okay, Texas, you're at 13. Vandy, you're at 14. Sorry, but we are knocking you out now with the way everything is, what we've decided, you're out.
Who's Notre Dame's best player, Sags?
Jeremiah Love.
Running back. How healthy is he?
Not as healthy as people would like him to be.
Thank you. So let me ask you this. They making any decisions on that as well?
Possibly. Just ask it.
Okay. Possibly. And we're, and that's why, well, all of this is just chatter now, but it does matter because depending on how far you got to move to get in.
Yeah.
And people keep saying, oh, Miami's safe at 12. No, they're not. There's a reason why they're not. We know why, because that group of five teams going to be sitting right there taking that. So while you belong in the top 12, you may not get a playoff spot. And I'm anxious to see how much of, into account they take the injury with Notre Dame's best football player, because Florida State felt that wrath a couple of years ago.
Yes, they did. Something else, I just mentioned Vandy as being, in my opinion, the second team out when you look at the rankings, with Texas being first. Vandy explored playing a 13th game.
Yep.
Now, they called some other teams. Some teams were reportedly interested, and due to scheduling and just operational everything, they're not able to get that done. And I get what they're doing, trying to impress the committee with another win over a quality opponent, whoever that is. But we set schedules for a reason. You can't just start adding games because now you're trying to get, you know, the committee to buy you in more. I mean, that's just not how sports.
Can you imagine? You see, it's like going sticking out of the box. I'm just going to start adding games for the hell of it, right?
Right. It's like, okay, I'm Vandy. We need to get into the playoff, so we're going to schedule whoever.
Wouldn't Texas want to do that too? Yeah, I can think of a bunch of teams that want to do it, right?
Right.
Utah. Right.
Yeah. Right. So I mean, it's just not feasible. I get what they're thinking in their minds, but can't happen.
I love the thought. Ain't happening.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure they take it into account anyway. So
yeah. Lastly, when it comes to college football, and this is a discussion we've had about the calendar, about, you know, with Lane having to make the decision before we even know the college football playoff rankings final standings. He has to make the decision to leave to go to LSU and leave his team, which is going to be in the playoff, and not coach his team in the playoff. Lincoln Riley talked about changing the schedule and what it would take to help all this stuff happen. Here's what Lincoln Riley had to say.
There's only, good, in my opinion, one way to fix all of this. And you got to have the national championship game somewhere around Christmas to New Year's.
Yes.
Like that's the only way it's going to work. Cause you got three things that are competing right now. You have high schools finishing their year, signing day, the high school calendar. You have college academic calendars and people getting in and out, and you have semesters and quarter systems, and you got all different calendars there. And then you have a college football season, and then you have the differing roster decisions that are having to happen. And the hard thing is, like, this isn't professional, you know, professional league. All right. Yeah. You end the season, you make all the rules where you do all the stuff after. It's easy because you don't have anything else competing.
Yep.
Here you're trying to balance things. Like, to me, that's the only way that it's ever going to get fixed, is you got to move the national championship game. And obviously you're going to have to make adjustments to a season to be able to play out a full season, and, or do you reduce games? I mean, people are going to have to figure that out, but like, this will not get fixed until that happens. Like, there's, you're going to always sacrifice something until that happens, and that'll be for the decision makers to make.
Boy, he's 100% correct, and I'll tell you another thing about that. Say the calendar. I don't know where you're moving the calendar, but it needs to be moved for all those things that Lincoln just mentioned. We've been saying that for a while. You just, you know, from the portal to the high school calendar to academic to in school, out of school. Excuse me. I don't want to move it later, Segs. Do you? I mean, too much later, because now we're late enough how it is. But if you move it up, then things got to change schedule wise. But I'm going to tell you what college football doesn't want. Now, maybe coaches or some do. Do you think that college football wants to play less games?
No, but that was my first thought. That was my first suggestion. Play 11
games.
Like,
get rid of one non-conference game or something, Segs?
Play two non-conference games, 9 conference games. That's what I think. I mean, everybody's moving to 9. SEC's moving to 9 next year. Big 10, Big 12 already play it. So you have, you know, the 9 conference games that you set up, however you set up in the conference. And then you have 2 non-conference games. Schedule who you want. If you want to play Ohio State, Texas, and you lose, it's going to hurt you. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Well, that's called competition in the way you do. We can't keep babying everything about it. Good gracious.
Losses don't matter.
Right.
And that's what everybody's wanting now, is losses not to matter. But yeah, if you get rid of that, you can move everything up. You move the early signing day to January 7th, whatever. And then you have
the second portal week in open. January, dude.
Yeah, you have anybody. The portal open that same time frame.
Same week.
And then
open it at the same time.
Start taking jobs, say, a week after the national championship. And that's how it works. And
haven't we been saying that since them? Then you just have a free. And I think what made for T, think what we do for the Heisman Trophy for the week and the one day.
Right.
Yeah. You know, because I always say, man, why don't we just do the Heisman Trophy at the end of the playoff? Because you're still playing games. To me, it matters. It just does. Because, and now, no disrespect to my guy Reggie Bush, because I love him, he had a great year. Had they done it after the national title, Vince Young would have won the Heisman Trophy that year. But move that back, move those. There's when it comes to the coaching. And think what kind of week you could make, Segs, or 2 week. Think about this. What kind of free-for-all would it do for college football and the optics if it was open like baseball or NFL free agency on a certain date and time?
Yeah.
You know, oh, a guy gets fired, we can hire another guy right now. Can you imagine? Now nobody's at a disadvantage, nobody's at an advantage, and coaches are not going to leave the guys that they were supposed to be coaching hanging. That's part of it. Right. But as far as all this goes, it's not only it's not a fractured system. The system is it's a compound fracture, and it is shattered.
It's broken in half.
Yeah. So we got to fix it. And there's not just one way. Lincoln got some good points, and there's some other people. And like I said, I just, there's no logic in putting in a position to make these guys make decisions to leave the team with a portal and how the playoff works and how the committee. Hell, name one part of the thing that's not broken when it comes to college football. Recruiting's weird. Yep. NIL's out of its mind. Transfer portal's out of its mind. Leaving coaching while they're doing it, and how many dates and times we let it. The dates are out of time. Early signing periods now become a wacko. Tell me what is fixed.
Nothing.
The players when they're on the field playing good football. Other than that, what's not need? What doesn't need fixed and put a cast on?
Right.
All of it. So we got to fix it, and a bunch of grown people can't.
Yeah, it's insanity right now, the way they're trying to do all this, and you can't. And if you had it all going, kids can still, if you have it, you could do it January 3rd. Because I know a big thing that coaches love about it right now with the early signing day is those kids that sign, if they've graduated, if they have the requirements to graduate high school, they can come right away and enter school, and then they can be a part of practices as they lead up to bowl games. So they're really getting good info, hard practices right away, learning stuff. Bryce Underwood for Michigan, he was there. I mean, all these freshmen, Malachi Toney at Miami, he was at Miami early getting work in, and that allows them to get stuff in before spring, and then they kind of have that momentum.
Let me be the counterpoint to that. Say you are 100% correct, speaking of Underwood and players. But what's the difference? Am I basing my program on a high school senior and when he can come watch us play during these games? Or am I basing my team that if it pushes that guy back where he's going in January as opposed to being around the bowl season and the playoffs, right? In truth, Segs, he still got all the way. They still got spring practice. They still, in truth, am I now catering to the 17-year-old who's not on my roster as opposed that is, wants to be, but isn't going to help me in the game? Right. As opposed to catering to the guys who've busted ass by moving it a couple weeks. In truth, to me, and you're right, but can't we push that back a little, Segs, and get to the
point?
Because how many of those guys are going to impact their team? And in truth, you learn it. And the coaches aren't stopping down to train you at that point in time. They're trying to get ready to win a national championship and win a playoff game.
Right.
You're just close to the optics, and it looks good. And in truth, some of the guys that will do that a year later are going to be playing somewhere else anyway. So
it's just a flawed system, and they need to fix it. And you know who else would like it if they did that? The NFL.
Absolutely.
They would quit encroaching on their playoffs. And I'm sure the NFL would love that if they were done by Christmas, and then the playoffs involve basically college football's free agency.
Even early January, because the last regular season game is what, early January for the NFL? Yes. Then they get the whole month of January to themselves when it comes to football viewing.
Right, exactly. Switching over to the NBA, and I said we don't talk a lot of NBA. We're going to talk a little bit here. Chris Paul sent home from the LA Clippers. He's announced this is going to be his last season. They're going to allow him to move on. It's reportedly been bad in LA to the point that Chris Paul, his style was not meshing with players, with coaches, with Tyronn Lue. One point he asked to have a meeting with Tyronn Lue about the way things were going. And Lue basically sent an assistant coach to just be like, hey, you're getting sent home. Like, we're just not going to have you around anymore. So it's kind of a shitty way for a really, really good career that Chris Paul's had, a Hall of Fame career, to end. Now, maybe he latches on with someone else, but he's not the player. He should have retired 3 years ago. But when you're making that much money, I get why you stay on and you just, you're a shell of yourself and you want that money at the end. But this is part of the problems with these major contracts. These guys are getting so late in their career that when they're bad, they still think they're good, but they have no business being in the NBA anymore.
He's going to jump into the category as one of the great players without a championship ring. Okay.
Yes.
Yes. Got close, never closed it up. I'm going to take a different take to this, Eggs. You're right. Shitty. Kind of optics look bad, right? You just didn't let the guy. He did it in the middle of the night. We see that a lot now because people are cowards and don't want to go face-to-face with a guy and just look at him in the eyes and say, dude, you're just not for us. The lawyering, the criticism in the building because you've been around it all and making it tougher on players. Listen, Chris Paul's got a reputation for being hard on players. Some call that leadership. Some call that a headache, right?
Right.
Throughout his career. He's at the stage now. You get a hall pass when it comes to that leadership. Maybe it's sometimes being overcritical because he's been in the league a long time, right? Got a lot of skin in the game.
Yeah.
But I'm going to take the other side, Sakes. This player empowerment. Why are the Clippers, just using them as an example, why are they obligated? Now, when you look at the organization, the Clippers, they've had a few problems in their organization, haven't they, Sakes? Whether it's the owner and his race issues or what, there's always something, whether it's getting all these players and never being able to close it out, underachieving, right, whatever it's been. So I ask you this. Let's compartmentalize for 1 second. Why are they obligated to keep a guy that's not helping them, that they don't think can help them, that they believe's a headache in the clubhouse, in the locker room? That's basically what that's what lawyering means, meaning you are everything. You got your hand and trying to have you immerse yourself into everything. This is not like, it's not personal against Chris Paul. They're making it personal. That's fine. Why are they obligated to give him a retirement tour when they want to get a player to get better? And why are the Clippers, now the way they did it's crappy, but the way Lane did his things week, the way we see it all the time, the way SC fired Kiffin on a tournament, the way this team gets rid of this guy, why fire this guy? How come you cut the player? Why aren't you paying him when he's hurt and rehab? We could talk forever about how shitty organizations are to players and vice versa. But I'm just asking one simple question. Why am I obligated just because I want to be a good guy to have a guy on my roster that they're basically saying, Sigs, we're not at Christmas yet. We're early in the season.
Yeah.
That they've already figured out he's not good for us and the other cats on this team. It's just not good for what we're trying to do. The lawyering, we're tired of it. Why are they obligated to keep him there? So it's a feel-good story. So you go on these local, these national television shows, and you can appear on, and other players say, man, the way the Clippers handled that, what a bunch of dogs, man. I can't believe they did that. Yet in the whole process, the Clippers have decided, they own it, it's their team, that he's too big of a headache for them, my term, not theirs, lawyering basically theirs. But why in the world am I obligated to send a guy on a retirement tour just because he had a great career? Hell, have him go do it somewhere else.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Is he going to retire? What's the team, when he goes in the Hall of Fame, I don't even know if they do this in the NBA, Sigs. I can't even remember.
Yeah, I don't
think jersey,
they do.
What jersey would he choose? He ain't going to choose the Clippers now.
Yeah.
Well, who would he choose? He's been on, Rockets. He's been a lot of places. What would he choose? I don't know the answer, but my point is, I got to appease him for that for 65 more games or whatever it is, 60 games?
I don't know.
I don't either. It's hard to keep up with it.
It really is.
My point, Segs, Charlotte too? Wasn't he in Charlotte for a minute as well? Wasn't he there?
I can't remember.
Was he in Charlotte earlier in his career?
Maybe.
But that's it. He's been in so long and had such a great career. He's touched teams, but we don't remember. But my point is, it's a shitty thing to do. But is it shitty to renegotiate a contract that they don't do when you have an out clause to leave a team hanging and go sign for a supermax somewhere else? Well, why aren't you committed to the team? So why are they obligated? I'm just talking about from an outsider. Why are they obligated to make him happy so he can have retirement tour. Even now, if they did this and they considered him a great teammate, they just did it because they don't want to. They just want to be clowns. But if they actually feel like the lawyering is affecting their team, they just don't want him around. He's not impactful for them in a positive way. If that's what they've decided,
yeah.
Why do I got to appease to First Take or Get Up or whatever and say, yeah, you know what? Or to me and you, why aren't you keeping Chris Paul? Yeah. Well, it's just respect out of 50 years in the league. Well, guess what? I don't owe him any respect. I've paid him before. Why?
Yeah.
Why do I have to do that?
They don't owe him anything like that. In fact, I think probably one of the reasons they wanted to get rid of that headache is because they have to deal with a bigger headache in Kawhi Leonard. I mean, that's something else that's much bigger
deal with both
and more
of them?
On the forefront for the Clippers, right. Is dealing with Kawhi Leonard and all his bullshit of being injured all the time and causing problems behind the scenes, and there's a lot.
Sakes, hasn't Chris Paul used the system to his advantage,
yes,
over his career?
Yes.
He even got championships.
Even got in the Players Association so he could change shit for himself and his buddies. So Chris Paul's anything.
I get as from our vet, people like, man, that's a weak ass thing to do. Well, shock, Clippers do that. They've done stuff, stupid stuff for a while. But I just don't understand why we think that, oh, you owe him. I owe him what? Now, I would owe him if he was a great teammate and we thought he was going to be productive, or they've decided with their money that they don't want him around. I don't have a problem with it, man. I just don't. Somebody will probably have money, leadership, and the rest, but like I said, for some, Chris Paul's a great leader at this stage of his career. For others, and has been a great leader. For others, some may not want the headache or the lawyering that goes on. So the Clippers decided we don't want it anymore. And when they make that decision, it can't just be, well, he said he got in a disagreement with one player. This has to be something that's festered for them, yeah. And they don't want to deal with it. It's weak doing it at 3 a.m. There ain't no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Overnight. So I honestly, to me, this is in and out. It ain't a good thing that's on my mind for the next week. I don't give a rat's ass.
Yeah. Chris Paul's buddy, LeBron, he's
here played. I knew this was coming.
He's played in 5 games this season. Pulling up his numbers right now. He's at 15 points a game. We're at 4 rebounds a game and 7 assists. So not what LeBron's known for. He's known for scoring, putting up big numbers and all this stuff. But we had an incident a few days back. They're playing the Suns. Luka's bringing the ball up, and you see J.J. Redick's yelling out a play call, and he's yelling for LeBron, who's on the floor, one of the 5 players on the court. What's LeBron doing? He is turned, talking to the Suns bench. Just turned and talking to them, not paying attention to anything, to the point that Luka got it, brought it up. J.J. Redick got pissed, called a timeout. What did LeBron do when the timeout was called? He sat there and talked to the Suns players longer. I mean, if you're J.J. Redick, you're trying to build a team with Austin Reeves and Luka Doncic and whoever else they got on that roster. You're trying to win games. LeBron seems like he's more interested in just kind of coasting along. We've seen some
glad handing.
Yeah. Yeah. Just having fun with some buddies on the sidelines, whatever. We've seen some incidents where Luke has gotten into some, you know, face-to-face kind of hard foul situations. And LeBron just kind of sits back, doesn't really do anything. And people are questioning, is LeBron not liking the fact that Luka has taken over this team since being traded there last year?
He's a better player right now.
LeBron's what, 41 years old or about to be 41 years old? Shit needs to change because LeBron is not the guy. We have all the bullshit with his son getting drafted. We know because he's his son, and then playing in that first game when he has no business being in the NBA right now. Another tail end.
Why do we give him a hall pass on this, Six?
I don't know.
There's not, well, LeBron's earned it. He's played 20 years. Of course he's a great player.
Yeah.
But he's still in uniform. What if that would have been, I don't care who you, somebody not named LeBron or Luka that's a bench player. What would everybody be saying? Cut him. You got to get rid of him. He's a distraction to the team. He is not all in. He's doing this on purpose. So you reserve the right, because you've had a great career, to wave off the coach, do whatever you want, and basically say, I'm bigger than the organization. He used to be. He ain't now. Right. But he's been great. So my question is, we're going to – oh, it's LeBron. That's cool. Or he gets a hall pass at this stage of his career to do stuff like this. Yet LeBron year five would have never done this. He'd have went and grabbed the guy, I'd like to hope, and brought him over. So what are you doing? And would have had the guy run out of the building and fired the coach for letting it happen.
Yeah.
When he was a player. So I just don't. And people are going to talk more about, oh, it's Braun. Braun. Don't be surprised if Chris Paul ends up playing point guard for them as well.
Oh, yeah. Don't
I'm be kidding. But, you know, yeah. I'm dead serious. So if you're J.J. Redick, can you just let this go, or the Lakers, and say, oh, man, LeBron's got this. It's okay. We're in a basketball game, but we can play 4-on-5 when we want, or call a timeout. He knows the game well enough. He doesn't have to come over here. Listen, I love LeBron's game. There's things about him I don't like, the flop and all that, but in all respect. But when he does this, it makes you think like, oh, you're just on borrowed time. You're not playing, but you're playing. Does that make sense?
Right. I mean, like I said, he's only played in 5 games, had, you know, an injury that, you know, people questioned early in the season as well. So it's just, it's one of those things.
Do you think
that
he's all into basketball right now?
No. He hasn't been all into basketball in a while. Now, he's still been a great player. And that's
all
this talk away. But now you're injured to open the season. You know, the whole Bronny situation, as I mentioned. And now this kind of stuff, when you've only played in 5 games. And, I mean, what I don't even know what the Lakers are. They are currently 15-5. So, like, they could use him to be LeBron.
Yeah.
But Luka and Austin Reeves are doing all the heavy lifting right now.
Scoring. When I say bad, I'm saying bad situation with this. Obviously, record-wise, they're fine, and Luka's a good – but Luka's a better player right now. He just is. So, I don't know. Does it bother him that he's become a guy as opposed to that guy? And, listen, it's not bad. There's guys that get to the point in their career where they're just not the same player. He's exceeded that by, like, 8 years. The guy's been phenomenal. But the optics are horrible here, and LeBron's no longer a top – he's not even a top 20 player in the league, correct? Correct?
No. I mean, right now he's the fourth leading scorer on his team. Now, again, that's he's only played 5 games. The others have played a lot more. But I said he's at 14. You got Luka at 35 points a game and Austin Reeves at 28.
Both are all-stars and both are having phenomenal seasons.
Yep. Yes, so, and DeAndre Ayton's come in and really helped them. So, I mean, they want to win. And you got LeBron sitting in the corner dicking around with Suns players on the bench.
Yeah, so, I guess because he's a veteran and knows that. What are they going to tell him in the huddle? He doesn't know. But it also looks bad to the guys that are standing. I don't know, man. Well, I understand player empowerment. I don't like it. And like I said, LeBron's been phenomenal. But when you see this, it's like, why? Well, why are we having this conversation at this point in time of his career? I just don't want to send him out with, yeah, he checked out in 15 games or 20 games in the season just along for the ride. He's too competitive for that, but maybe his mental, the mental side of it, he's being affected by the fact that he's not the go-to guy on there.
Yeah, and that's never been the situation for LeBron.
Ever.
Before we get out of here, we always do our bet of the day. Now, tomorrow we'll do our six-pack of picks as we always do, three college, three NFL. But tonight, Thursday Night Football, we got a good what should be a high scoring top, two of the top three offenses in yards per game in the league. You got the Cowboys at the Lions. The Lions are favored by just 3. So basically they're saying this is a pick 'em because Detroit's at home where you normally get 3. And you said earlier, you didn't know the over under. Normally a high NFL game sits at about 50, maybe 51.
Yeah. Yeah, or low 50 some, 52 and a half, 51 and a half. Yeah.
This game set at 54 and a half. So they are expecting a lot of points in this one. And honestly, as I sit here right now, I hadn't even decided who I want to take in this game because I've just gone back and forth. Every time I look at it, I change my mind. But I think in the end, I'm going to see it. My heart says pick Dallas. You want Dallas to win as a Bears fan. But in my head, if I'm actually betting it and I'm putting money And I probably will throw a little bit of money on this game.
I'm going to.
I'm taking the Lions minus the 3 since they're at home. And give me the under.
See? On mine. And is that, did this line start out at 3.5? Because on the side I'm looking at.
It right? Might have been.
And it's gone down, which tells you, you know, the sharps that you're on okay. To something.
ESPN, which I use right now, it has jumped to 3.5. So at the beginning of the show, when I wrote it down, it was 3. Now it's 3.5.
So it's going the other way to see, because I had it at 3.5, and I'm saying, man, this is a field goal game for me. So my propensity would be to take the Cowboys plus 3 going on. The Lions have to the Lions have to get to a point where they need to play great football again. Sakes, think about it. First game of the year, we're like, what's going on with them? Then they ran through that for a couple weeks. Like, oh, they don't miss Ben Johnson much at all, right? And then we got back into what the hell's going on. And now, they'll go from 4th down on 4th and 27, but in the middle of the second quarter, backed up at their own 20. But I the 3.5 is a little concerning to me. If I'm betting it tonight, which I am, you like the under. I don't like the under. I think both offenses are going to be geared and smart. I think this is a 31-28 type game. I do, 31-27. I think the safer bet for me is to take the over in the game. I feel like it's obvious, and amateurs, we all, you know, and I love the bet, love the over, love the favorite. But in this game tonight at home, I think there's a sense of urgency that both have to play with. Advantage at home a little bit, Detroit. 3.5, I would lean towards the Cowboys. I would. But I'm betting the over on the game. I actually think it's going to be up near the 60s.
Okay. Yeah, so I'll say you said 31-28. I like that. I'll say 28-24, which puts me just under, about 3 points under, and I think, and that gives me the Detroit winning with the 3.5 by 4. So that's what I'm going to pick.
I just think the passing game, if you come out of this game with – if it hits like I think, Segs, we're talking 800 yards of offense tonight.
Yeah.
If it hits like I think it's going to hit. The Cowboys are probably, you know, they're not as efficient running it as Detroit is. But Detroit, part of the run game also to limit Dallas's possessions. Because there's some injuries on Detroit, the back end as well, Segs, that Dallas will try to exploit, right? So I like the over in the game, but it's always tough. If this was being played somewhere outdoors in inclement weather, I'd say they're going to have to grind it out. But I just think both offenses are so – they got such good bandwidth. I like the over in the game. Seems obvious, and sometimes I get a little nervous with that. I'm taking – and I think Amon-Ra's going to be fine. Give me – and he didn't have a great game last week, right, Six?
Banged, no.
I mean, laid some balls on the ground with his hand. That doesn't happen to him very often. I think it was last week. Thanksgiving screws me up. I think on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's where I get screwed up.
We dropped them, right. But I like the over, obvious, but I like the over in the football game.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if Dan Campbell and company come out knowing how good, and really you could look at both teams and say the exact same thing. Knowing how good the passing game is for each team, does either team come out Dallas with Javonte Williams or Detroit with David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs, say, let's run the ball early, eat up some clock. Hopefully we can get a little bit of longer drives, which limits the drives in the game for the other team and their offense to score as many points.
Yeah, you want to shorten the game if you're Detroit. It's odd, Segs. We're saying Detroit. You want to shorten the game? I mean, you got all the offense. We always look at them as explosive. Laporta, right, Segs?
Yep.
I mean, there's that. So you do want to – I mean, I think at times – maybe more in college than the NFL, but at times time of possession can be overrated, because if you can score from the parking lot, score quick, that time of possession doesn't mean diddly squat to me, right? I mean, if you can go score, you're one of those 7-play teams and you're in the end zone. But I do think tonight, the way the Cowboys have the confidence is growing offensively, weapons-wise, and Detroit a little banged up, I think that you have to take advantage of the run game and do everything you can to limit the Cowboys' possessions, because this also could be one of those games where punters get awful bored, Segs, if it's going the way both offenses want it to go. So I am going to stick with the over and throw a little on there for sure.
Yeah, definitely will tonight. That'll do it for us today. Tomorrow, we got plenty to talk about. Like I said, we do our 6-pack of picks as we do every single Friday, 3 NFL three college games. We'll start breaking down conference championship weekend. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, Isaiah, I just want to make sure, because like I said, the games from a Sunday to a Thursday, back to a Sunday, and now to this Thursday, did I know he got hurt in the game, St. Brown, but Sags, when did I see him lay the ball and drop a couple balls? Was it early in the game or was it the week before? That's it what I was. It Sunday
like
before?
I said,
it
I
might
watched...
have been a week ago Sunday, but he doesn't. The ball doesn't get it. He doesn't leave many. That didn't run together. But the injury is more my concern. The injury is more the concern because that ball doesn't hit the ground much. What's in his catch radius?
Yeah.
But I just think that be alert for both teams, especially Detroit's play action. I just hope Detroit doesn't get too cute when it comes to the in red zone and double reverse and have the running back throw the pass. Get your shit right, Dan. You know what wins games. No gimmicks. They come at the right time and line up and play football. Don't let the gimmicks and the fourth down six times get you beat, because you're not going to make the playoffs if this continues. And they're too good to miss the playoffs.
I'm glad you said that, because last year when they were really good and they had Ben Johnson running things and things were clicking, running and throwing the ball, you could live with those cute plays every once in a while when you're winning games. Now you're 7-5. You're outside the playoffs as we speak right now. You got to play against a good Dallas Cowboys offense tonight. If you lose and you threw a couple trick plays in there that don't work, fans are going to start looking at you and being like, okay, Dan Campbell, was it Ben Johnson? Was it Aaron Glenn for the defense? You know, what are you really doing here with us? Because maybe your coordinators aren't the guys that you got right now.
I can dick around at 10-2.
Yes.
And looking at home field advantage throughout the playoffs, when the objects are closer in that side view mirror than they appear, you might want to just line up and play good, solid football and save the gimmicks for another time.
Just rely on your best players to do what they
do. No doubt. Because if you give the Cowboys a short field, Segs, by going forward to midfield, they will beat you in your building.
100%. All right. Huh. Fun show today. We got conference championship weekend. We'll look ahead. You know, we've done all the looking ahead to the college football playoff rankings, but we'll look ahead to conference championship weekend. Who do we think, like in the SEC, the Big Ten has a big matchup that nobody's talking about. We have 1-2 playing, and it's like I saw someone rate the games this weekend, and that game was like sixth of all the conference
games. Do they think Ohio State's going to curb stomp them?
No, I think it's just because both teams are in. Both teams are probably getting byes, so it really doesn't matter in the big
scheme of things.
Like the
old flip-flop version,
State and Indiana, you want to win the Big Ten. You want that number one seed rolling into the playoffs. But I think overall in the country, it's like, you know, game day's going to Atlanta for the SEC championship because that's their conference.
Of course they are.
But there's just other games that I guess mean more when it comes to the college football playoff picture and all that kind of stuff. So we'll start looking at that. We'll look ahead to the NFL weekend. And then one other NBA topic I want to hit on probably later in the show tomorrow. Giannis Antetokounmpo is now asking for a trade. Reportedly asked for a trade in the summer just to the Knicks. They couldn't figure out a deal. He is now back asking for a trade to get out of Milwaukee to go to a contender.
You know who wanted him, Siggs? You know who wanted him all offseason but didn't pull it out when we got KD? You know who wants to jump into that fray, right?
Yes,
the Houston Rockets.
Well,
at least that was talked this up. That's exactly.
Yeah,
you got to give a lot of core and a lot of picks.
If
you're doing that, Shingun's going, and a couple more.
Yeah.
A couple more. That's right.
Thompson.
So I don't know if they're going to jump into it, Segs, but, you know, that talk was in Houston was epic all offseason until KD quieted it down, obviously. Yes. But that's going to be a hot topic on basketball for a while until it gets done or doesn't one way or the other.
So we can just kind of start discussing that, what we think of him asking for the trade now. What does it take to get to this point where you demand a trade from the team you've been with your entire career that developed you into the player you are now because you weren't that guy when you walked into the league? So I think we can just talk about different angles to the trade request from Giannis Antetokounmpo. So we'll be back here tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central. Thanks to Triple E. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to Bailey, as always, behind the scenes, making our show go. Follow, like, and subscribe the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. We're rolling. And it's almost, gosh, college football, we blink, college football is going to be over.
Yeah, and we blink, and we're going to be watching another fun Saturday. I love championship weekend, Sakes. Yes. Can't wait.
It's big games, big games. We'll be back tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central. Peace.
Unpaved, Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.